The date is March 29th, 2022. You know, March may be going out like a lamb, but we're still putting some stank on it, because it's time for another episode of The Other Side, the official podcast of the finest comedy club in all the land, the DC Improv. I'm your host, Chris White. Good times today for episode number 131. We are talking to one of my favorite performers, Marshall Brandon. Longtime running buddy of Donnell Rawlings and a great headliner in his own right. Marshall will be in town April 14th through the 16th. Also, a few more free sketches on the way to get you in the mood for April 9th when Bad Medicine presents Sketch Night in our lounge showroom. But first, some quick news. The DC Improv, the finest comedy club in all the land, turns 30 this summer, and we are celebrating by, you guessed it, putting on a huge show. The details of that show get revealed April 1st, which is this Friday, but you only get the first shot of tickets if you are on our pre-sale texting list. So if you're interested in that, go over to dcimprov.com and look for the banner that says Join the Club. Click on that and you can sign up from there. Also, this week, April 1, 2, Friday and Saturday, Jordan Rock is in town in the main showroom April 1st and 2nd. He's been a guest on this podcast before, episodes number 79 and number 118. So if you want a little sneak preview, go back and check those out before you grab your tickets to see him this weekend. But with all that said, on to the main events. The DC Improv got to know Marshall Brandon when he came to town as the opening act for Donnell Rawlings. But Marshall is a headliner in his own right. He has headlined our lounge in the past, and he's back to do it again. April 14th through the 16th, the Thursday, Friday, and Saturday before Easter. Marshall has just really great delivery, and his material is a cool mix of thoughtful and goofy. I really love watching him, and I think you will too. Definitely check him out on YouTube, and, of course, listen to this interview. Enjoy. Joining us now, the pride of Hartford, Connecticut, it's Marshall Brandon. How you doing, Marshall?
Oh, great, man. Thanks for having me on. I've been waiting for this moment.
This moment? Being on this podcast your whole life?
Yes, being on this podcast.
You've been grossly misinformed about how important this podcast is, Marshall.
Oh, man. No, I know what I'm talking about. This is the one right here. It's Joe Rogan and then this one.
Yes, that's I'm often considered the white middle-aged Joe Rogan as opposed to the regular Joe Rogan.
Hey.
Have you met Joe much before, or have you been on Joe Rogan? I'm trying to remember if you've been on.
No, I haven't been on there. I did perform with him down in Austin. I was on a show with him. Me, him, Tony Hinchcliffe, Dave Chappelle, Mo Ammer, and Donnell Rawlings.
That's one hell of a lineup. For people who don't know, yeah. Marshall does, in addition to being a great comedian in his own right, rolls with some pretty pretty impressive friends as well, right?
Yeah. I got some pretty heavy, some heavy hitters.
Yeah.
In my corner.
Yeah.
Real pretty cool guys.
I'll get back to that in a little bit, but I want to start. I called you the pride of Hartford. You're from Connecticut. I'm gonna tell you right
yes.
now. What I know about Connecticut is almost nothing. I don't even know what to associate with Hartford. Is there actual pride in being from Hartford? What's it like up that way?
Well, yeah, they do have a parade somewhere out here every year. But Hartford is, you know, it's just like any other city, you know what I mean? It's diverse. It's got, you know, it has the third biggest West Indian population in the country.
Huh.
That's something a lot of people don't know. So growing up, I got a lot, like growing up, and for me, it was normal, but you know, you got all of the major reggae artists and stuff like that will come through, and I'm thinking they go everywhere, but I didn't know that we had the third biggest population of West Indian people, but we have that here. It's just like any other city, you know, just some nice places, some very dangerous places.
Which one did you come from, the nice place or the very dangerous place?
In between. I started out in the dangerous place and ended up in the nicer place.
I think most people who look like me mostly think Connecticut, the only real association they have is Gilmore Girls. So it's nice to know there's something else going on. You know.
Well, yeah. People always hit me with the, they got black people in Connecticut? So I get hit with that too. There's plenty of black people up here.
You mentioned among the people you hang with, Mo Ammer. I've had the chance to talk to him before about growing up in Houston, and he talked about the neighborhoods where he was were ridiculously diverse, just all races, all faiths, all that sort of stuff. Is that something that he kind of thought that was something that helped him a little bit in his comedy as well, like being around all those different ways of thinking, all those different influences? Is that something that you ever think back that helps you in what you're doing now?
Oh, definitely, because I can tell you, like, living in Hartford, there were two white kids in my school. Everyone else was either Black, West Indian, or Latino. That's pretty much what the inner city schools are made up of. But they didn't have a sports program here when I started playing sports. I was maybe like about 7 or 8 years old, so. I went out and played in the suburbs, and the suburbs were pretty much all white people. They maybe had like maybe 15-20% Black people when I started playing out there, or just people that weren't white. And I think that growing up, so it was kind of like I played sports out in the suburbs my whole life. So I grew up around everybody.
Yeah.
And then I ended up going to high school out in Windsor, which was had like a 35% minority population. And, but that definitely helps to grow up around everyone, you know?
Yeah. I grew up in mostly white suburbs, and it's like, you know, I like my upbringing. I like my childhood, but it was definitely, you're missing something when you move to a city like DC, a lot of catching up as an adult. So yeah.
Right. Yeah. You a lot to learn. But I think it definitely, you know, like, I'm the kind of guy I'm comfortable anywhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, I could be in the hood, in the middle of the hood, or I could be in the middle of, like, the whitest party or around anybody. It doesn't matter, you know. You kind of learn that people are people at the end of the day, you know.
How far does that go? Because I know you've traveled the world. Comedy's taking you around. You've been not just around the United States. You've been overseas doing shows. Is there any place you've ever been where you're like, oh, I do not get what's going on here?
You know, I was in Holland. I was on a tour in Holland. And, like, in Amsterdam, everything was, you know, people, all the Dutch people, they speak English. Yep. You know, it's like their second or third language. And I thought that's why I think we're not that bright over here, because they all speak like 3 or 4 languages over there and stuff. So it's like we only speak one, and we're like, you better speak English. And so, but over there, one of the dates on our tour took us like out in the sticks. We were like way out in the sticks, and where they didn't, you know, they could speak English and understand it, but they didn't, you know, use it much. So that was a time where I was like, because you tell a joke and you get to the end, you'd be like on your punchline, like, ta-da! And they'd be looking at you like, I do not get it, you know? So it was out there. And one time I was in Vermont and I walked in the room.
Same difference.
It was like a bunch of cowboy hats and cowboy boots. And so as a joke, like when the show started, I took my knife out and said, yeah, I'm going to just go ahead and put this right here. And everybody started laughing, but at the end of the show, one of the cowboys came up to me and was like, oh man, you was funny. I don't think he had an accent. We're in Vermont. He was like, you were funny. He was like, but I'd keep my knife out if I was you. I was like, all right. Then I folded my knife up and got my money and left. So.
Well, there's people.
But those are two places that came to mind.
It's funny to me. Yeah, it's like, so you're kind of on the edge of southern edge of New England where you grew up. But it's like, if you ever get up to Vermont, New Hampshire, people think, oh, it's just like, it's super waspy, super wet. You're like, there's little pockets of the South up there. Like, they got places where they love NASCAR in New Hampshire. I mean, they got a track.
Oh,
up there.
Yeah. Yeah. They got some places where they love New Hampshire and New Hampshire. Like,
yeah.
It can get pretty white out there.
So, a lot of people, well, some of the people we talk to when we ask them about stand-up, it's something that it was their dream from, you know, I was a kid, I grew up, I loved stand-up, I always wanted to be a stand-up comedian. Was that the case for you?
You know, I look back on it, and after I had done comedy for some years, I look back on it, and I don't want to say that it was that I wanted to do comedy all my life. It was just that at a early age, I was in kindergarten, my dad hit the Mega Bucks for $50,000, right? And they had like this pool at his job where, you know, they buy a bunch of tickets. So he ended up winning $50,000. And he went out and he bought like 3 suits, 2 leather trench coats, a pair of shoes, a couple pairs of shoes, and we got cable. And then the rest went on a song and a dance. But we got cable. And so I had HBO from an early age. I was like the only kid in my class with cable. I had HBO. And that's where I started watching comedy. And looking back, I realized, like, if I'm going through the channels and comedy's on, I'm watching it. And then I remember that I could recognize, like, who was funny. Like, if they were really funny or if they were just, like, on the show just because they do comedy. But, like, the really special comedians, I could always pick them out. You know, I knew what a joke was. So, I've always had a love for comedy. Like, it was deeper than I thought. You know what I mean? When I go back and look at how much I, like, really was into comedy. And I decided I wanted to be a comedian when I was in college. Me and my roommate, we made a pact that we would be professional bums. Like, like, we make money, but not in a traditional way. And he got out and he bought, like, 5 houses with some bad paperwork. And I started telling jokes. And so, but that's what, but I knew in college that I saw my first live comedy show in college. And that's when I knew I wanted to do, like, I definitely knew I wanted to do comedy after I got out.
Did you jump to a pro level right out of school, or did you work, or do you have to bum around a little bit first and actually work?
No, I did work. I didn't work in my field. I have my bachelor's in criminal justice, and I never worked in my field. I got a job, and I was having a daughter at the time because I was going to go to law school, but then I got my daughter's mother pregnant, and so I don't know. Like, I always think she kind of did it, but I. You know, like, it was just, like, out of nowhere. It's like, you know, I'm birth control pills for 3 years. All of a sudden, like, ooh, they changed my prescription, and I forgot to tell you. And so I had this child, so I'm like, okay, I got to take care of my daughter. So I worked at a couple temp agencies, and then I got a job at Travelers selling auto and home insurance. Because, you know, Hartford is the
insurance capital insurance of the country. Capital. Yeah, right, yeah.
So, yeah, I was a licensed insurance salesman, but I wasn't doing no cold calling. They were calling me.
Yeah.
So that made it better. And I did that for a while. And then I went back to temping for a little bit after that job. They laid us off. They always laying people off at insurance companies, I guess. But they laid us off and I worked and I got about like 4 years in, and I was like, yo, I'm going for it, man. I'm just going to dive into this comedy thing.
Yeah.
So I've been doing it.
Did you go down to New York for it? Because, I mean, it's not that far to get to New York from Hartford. Or is there a scene actually up that way?
Yeah, I went a few times. But and they were good experiences. But I kind of realized that, you know, I was like 2 hours away. And I was like, let me get a little better. Let me get a little better at it. And the cool thing about it was that when I said these crowds are the same as the New York crowds, are the same as the Connecticut crowds. Like, if you go in the hood, it's the same hood people. If you go in the suburbs, the same, you know, it's the same people. So I kind of really focused my attention here. There was a guy named, Big Greg, we called him. His name was Vader. He had 2 nights that he did in Connecticut. And then there was a couple guys up in Massachusetts that did regular shows. And so that's why I really would practice, you know, and that's where I got my skills up. So like 3 years in, when I started to go to, when I went to New York, when I started going down to New York and stuff like that, I already kind of, you know, I had a set. Yeah. I had already...
You hit the ground running.
And I was able to work too. Like, I was able to get booked early in New York. So that really helped.
I'm kind of curious. So one of the things I enjoy, I've had the chance to watch you a bunch of times over the years. First, when you were coming in, just with Donnell, you've headlined the lounge showroom a couple times. You know, so I've got the chance to see you, you know, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 times over the years. And the one thing I kind of enjoy is that you do, you're a good writer. You have a lot of great jokes. You talk about everything. You talk about, you know, race, society, everything. But I kind of like that you have this, I don't know if you call it like a silly streak. You have some of these longer bits that are just a little bit off center and a little bit, I mean, goofy, not dumb, but just kind of like a little more fun. It's like it keeps the comedy in comedy. Is that something you have from the drop, or is it something that you kind of had to develop over time?
It kind of happened organically, I'd say, because with my comedy, it's like I really want people, like I want people to have fun with my comedy, but I wanted to be a message there too. So I want people to kind of leave, and some of my jokes that they, you know, like something sits, you know, I want something to sit with them. You know, I don't want it, but it's like, it's comedy and your love for comedy is what brings out that silliness that, you know, that, so it's like, I'm going to have these jokes to where, you know, I might talk about life or, you know, race or whatever, that's, you know, maybe a little more edgy on, like on the serious side, but we're going to keep it super silly too. You know what I mean? There are going to be some moments in there where I'm just really having fun because we're doing comedy. And at the end of the day, that's what it's about. Like, you know, having fun, making people laugh, making people feel good. And that's where the silliness comes from. Like, that's going to always be there. I think that kind of was there, and then the whole message part came after. So it just kind of like they meshed together. And then like I look back and I'm like, okay, that joke had a message in it. And I'm like, I know this one don't. It's just because there was no intention on, like, no intent on having a message in this one. But it's cool that you even noticed that, man, because That's how it is. It's like there's some of the, you know, there's comedy about, you know, serious subjects we all go through, but then there's just like I try to like go so far down the hill that people be like, you know, where did he come up with this, you know?
Yeah, it's one of those things that, to me, it's what makes you memorable. I mean, I'm not the normal comedy consumer in that I watch this stuff constantly, you know. I work at a comedy club, so I see it all the time. So it's like a lot of it, you see it, you're like, that's good, but then it's out of your head. And I'm trying to think, there's one bit you do that's that you've been doing the last few times through. It's if space aliens invade, and it's essentially about how white people will be treated if space aliens invade, and how it's going to end racism. And the whole bit is just really, it's a lot of fun. But at the end, you're like, yeah, you know what? He's probably right too, you know.
Yeah, it's crazy how it works out with jokes sometimes, because it's like when I was younger, a lot younger, I used to write raps, and so I would write a rap, and then when I go back and read it, it would be like three different meanings on one line. You know what I mean? It'd be like double and triple, I think they call them entendres or whatever. On one line, and I meant it. That was my bad. That was Scam Likely calling me, and I meant it, you know, and writing it, I meant it maybe one or two ways, but then coming back into it, it's like, oh, and then I find another way it can be taken and stuff like that, and it's weird. Like with my jokes, sometimes it's like, it's almost like they write themselves sometimes. And it's like, and I'll be like, and then the next line will come and I'll be like, oh my God. Oh, and then it just kind of shapes itself into a ball of fun knowledge.
Yeah. It's like I said, it's always what kind of makes you stick out in my mind, if nothing else. So
thank you. I appreciate that.
That and your very distinctive name. I did want to ask you this. If you Google, this is one of the tough things. If you Google Brandon Marshall, Marshall Brandon, there's two NFL players, two very good NFL players who have
your
name.
Yo, man.
Yeah. Have you ever thought about changing it just a little bit? Yeah.
Yo, I've been wanting to get Google on the phone. That's what I've been wanting to do. Like, yo, I exist out here. Like, yo, you know, it's messed up. Like I was, you know, I was out here first. Okay. I was out here first. All right. I wasn't as popular first, but I was out here first. Then here comes these two Brandon Marshalls, right? There's one. And I'm like, okay, he's a linebacker. You know, I was like, okay, you know, his career is going to, you know, boom. The other Brandon Marshall comes receiver. And I'm like, I'm just waiting for these guys to retire. And then Brandon Marshall retires and becomes an analyst. And it's like, now,
he'll be on TV till he's dead. The news, yeah, right.
You know, but it's getting better though, because when I Google myself, more and more stuff about me is popping up. But it'll be like a couple things about me and then a touchdown that he ran or that he caught or you know what I mean? I'm like, yo, hey, I go through it all the time. I'm at, like, even at the airport, they look at my ticket and you clearly see it says Marshall Brandon. They're like, are you the receiver from the NFL? And I'm like, look at my gut. Do I look like...
It's an off-season conditioning.
Do I look like
yeah.
a receiver from the NFL?
3 weeks of working out, you shed that, no problem. They got professional trainers, man. You'll be fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, yeah, I definitely, that happens, man. And then the crazy thing is Brandon Marshall does a comedy show. And I'm like, how could you not put Marshall Brandon on your comedy? Like, that's a no-brainer.
You would think.
Like,
he owes you.
I should be on the show every year. I should be the host.
Every year. that's fantastic. Speaking of famous people with famous names, the way we got to know you at the Improv is through Donnell Rawlings, DC.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Big bro.
Yeah, DC legend. I know you travel with Donnell a lot. I know you perform with him not just here but all over the place. But I don't know that I've ever heard the story about how you guys met up. How'd you guys kind of start that kind of connection?
Yeah, there was a comedian named Brooklyn Mike who was like the first New York comedian that he kind of helped me get in the game. He was the reason why I was able to come to New York. He met me out in Boston, told me if I ever want to come to New York, you know, just hit him up. So I hit him up. We started hanging out in Boston, but with that, he helped me to where it was like I could get booked in places without being known, because he'd be like, hey, Marshall Brandon's in town. You know, I've met a lot of the comedians and worked with them a lot in Connecticut when they came down. He'd be like, you know, you got that other spot open. And so I kind of came in as a working comedian because he met me working. And Donnell used to host a room called Footprints on in Brooklyn. This was like a West Indian spot. And it was a pretty notorious spot. It wasn't like an easy place to do comedy. Like it was like you had to bring it.
Yeah.
And so I would go there. I went there and I met him. And every time, and so he was like, Donnell was like, yo, and him and Mike were really, really close. And so they were really, really close. So he was like, you go with Mike, you go with me. And so then I started going there on my own all the time. And then there would be a bunch of comedians there that was scared to go on. But I'm like, yo, I drove 2 hours to get on stage. Like, there's no way I'm not going. Cause so he's going down the line, seeing who wants to go on. And they're like, nope, I'm good. Nope, I'm good. Then he get to me and I'm like, hell yeah, I want to go on. And I think Donnell kind of, I think he liked that. And I had some pretty good jokes at the time. I thought, you know, it was just like, Donnell used to tear everybody up on stage. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, he was a heckler. That's how he started. He was a heckler. That's how he kind of got started here.
Yeah.
In DC. Yeah.
So like comics would go up and he would come up after them and just really tear them up because he was a host. But he all, you know, I think he kind of like took a liking to me, like, and then we ended up, and that was like 3, maybe 4 years into comedy. It was probably, you know, it was a lot of years ago. We ended up down in Bermuda. Me, him, and Brooklyn Mike did a trip down there. And he was like, Marshall's pretty cool, you know? And that was kind of what started our relationship down there in Bermuda, just us being able to get to, you know, with comedy, you get to go on the road with somebody.
Yeah.
They kind of get to see how you are. And I had already been on the road with a few comedians, but it's like, I definitely know, you know, I know how to play my position, you know, and knew, you know, because, you know, a lot of comedians are going to roll, be complaining about stuff. And it's like, yo, it ain't even your show, bro. You the opening act. Like, like, what are you doing? And so our friendship started from there. And probably like about 7 or 8 years ago, And throughout the years, I'd always end up on a show with him here and there, college or something like that. And then he took me out for a weekend. We did a weekend somewhere, and we're eating lunch, and he's like, "Man, just go on my calendar and pick what date you want to do." Oof.
That's got to be a good feeling, right? Particularly when you're kind of on the way up.
It was the best feeling in the world, because it was like, at this time, you know, Donnell been on. He's one person I say that books television like he books shows, like he books comedy shows. It's like he's always on television, you know. And so from when I started going on roll, it's always been like that celebrity aspect to it. You know what I mean? Like even when we went to Bermuda, he was famous for being on Ricky Lake. Everybody on the island knew him for being on Ricky Lake. You know what I mean? Because he was on the panel there. So and even back then, but going through the years, it was definitely a big step up from what I was used to doing, you know. And so for him to be like, "Yo, just whatever weekend you want," it was like he changed my life.
Yeah. So that said, I want you to throw him under the bus now. Traveling with someone, people like comedy, you're working nights, you have a lot of time during the day. So traveling with someone, particularly in a comedy setting, you know, whether it's Donnell, whether it's anybody, you know, sometimes you got to click during the day too. What kind of stuff, if you're on the road, what do you like to do? What's a daytime activity for Marshall Brandon? Yeah.
For me, I like to go, I like to eat a nice meal. I like to, if there is, I usually be trying to go shopping or something like that. My life is so crazy that being on the road is like my chance to like where I'm away from everything. So it's like one rule I kind of picked up from being, you know, from traveling with these, like we always make sure we're back in the hotel by 3:00. So whatever you do it before 3:00.
Yeah.
So whether it's going to, you know, it's like I always try to find somewhere nice to eat lunch because I like that. And if I got any shopping to do, I'll go do that. But I'm really, that's like my vacation time. Then like from like 3 to 6. I shut it down at 3:00. That's when I'm resting and laying around. I'm pretty lazy on the road. You know what I mean? I really just, because it's like I don't really get a lot of rest. So
we're going to say
that's like my thing.
Respectfully, if you're here to watch Marshall April 14th to 16th and it's between 3 and 6 and you're a groupie looking to get with him, anything like that, just respectfully lay off between the hours of 3 and 6. Let the man get his rest. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Come like between 1 and 3.
Yeah. That's he needs to work off his big lunch, and that's when you really want to, you know, slide in. Yeah.
So, there you go. Yeah. Or after the show, but 3:00, 3 to 6, I'm out of, I can't deal with it.
Yeah. So I'm going to say there's a very small chance, minimal chance that Donnell will listen to this. So if you want to say anything that about Donnell that annoys you, now's the chance. Anything that really
Oh, no, I could never. That's
yes,
my
could.
Brother, man. Yeah, I could never, ever, like that, like
he's good people.
So much.
Yeah, yeah.
He's done so much for me, man. That is like that's the last thing I could ever do. You know what I mean? That's my bro right there.
All right, I got two more questions for you. Then we'll let you run.
Okay.
Yeah. First, you got this. If anyone's looking at this on video, behind you have an awesome Zoom backdrop here. It's all these classic album covers. This is exactly the kind of music that I also love, even though you wouldn't guess it by looking at me. How big of a music guy? It's all these hips. I'm seeing what you got. Biz Markie. You got the Ohio Players. I saw Earth, Wind, and Fire over your right shoulder. You got all kinds of stuff. Big Daddy Kane. Are those all actual vinyl? You just buy these at old record stores? What'd you do?
Yeah, these are all actual records. I have all of these records. Yeah. I actually made this wall when the pandemic started.
Yeah.
I was quarantined, and I was like, "Yo, I need to make a corner. I'm gonna be going on Zoom soon." And I didn't know what to do for a background. And then I was like, I got like a pretty nice record collection. I'm one of them people who like, I'll buy records from, you know, like a record store, but I'll also go like, if I see like a thrift store or something like that, I'm gonna go in there and go through their records.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Their records be like a buck. And so I'll go through there and buy like 20 records. Records I don't even, like, I listen to all of them, but, you know, it's just all a wide range of music. Yeah. You know what I mean? It could be jazz, it could be hip hop, it could be rock, it could be big band. It doesn't matter. But I love music. That's
so going through record stores. I know I've talked to other comedians who have if you have that one hobby, like I like antiquing, like Jordan Rock loves like vintage clothes and stuff like that. So whenever he goes to a city, if there's a good vintage clothes store, you know, it's his chance to kind of like, you know, go farming, you know, find this stuff around the country. So
yeah.
I assume you've been to record stores around. What's like your favorite record store find that you've ever got? Does it want to jump out at you?
My favorite record store find was, let me look back here. It was, I got the best of Bill Cosby up here that I found at a home. And Richard Pryor down here, that nigga's crazy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. So those are two that I like. Those are two that I found, and I was like, oh man. So
the thing I love when you get albums is, I wish I had more places to keep in my house. I don't have a cool corner like you, unfortunately, is that it's the art. I think that's what's one thing that's been kind of lost. Like, particularly like I like Parliament. And when you buy old Parliament albums, the art and this, they have, it's like a cartoon. They have a whole freaking story on the album jacket. And you, like, when you buy it on CD, they just shrank the whole thing. You can barely read it. It's like, no, you got to get this as an album, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, and they still, like, album artwork is still important, but back when it was, you know, like, when, you know, whatever, you know, and they, like, now it's, you know, it's still important, but I think it was way more important back when the albums were coming out, like, you were doing your album cover.
Yeah.
I think that, like, look at Millie Jackson up there with her tongue out, you know what I'm saying? Like, that was, and the Ohio Players, right?
I mean,
you know, Big Daddy Kane was, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, rappers don't do album covers like this anymore, you know?
It's a lost art. So I've seen some comedians kind of go retro and put an album out on vinyl. Is that something you ever thought about doing?
I'm definitely doing that. I thought about doing it and getting a bunch of them printed up and selling them at my shows. But I'm definitely gonna put vinyl out.
So what would you do for the cover then? That's the biggest question. If you got a
for the cover? Yeah. Oh, I got a bunch of I got a bunch of baby pictures and stuff like that. But when we were talking and you mentioned Parliament and like the whole story thing, I was like, damn, I could really like because like my albums are called Marshall Brandon's Story anyway. Brandon's Story Volume 1, Volume 2. I could really like I could really go a little deeper than just a, you know, a cool picture of me. Like, I could really put some stuff in there. So my next album cover is going to be out of this world.
First set that comes off the press, save one for me. I want it.
I got you. Yeah. I definitely got you.
Last question for you. You're going to be here April 14th through the 16th, headline in the Lounge Showroom. Easter week. Of course, we're off Easter Sunday. Is Easter a holiday that you look forward to? Is it a big thing for your family?
No, not at all. It was like when I was with my daughter's mother, it was like the one time I would go to church out of the year. And not that I love God, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it was like a tradition for them. And it didn't feel right because I'm like, it's Easter. Like, that don't even count to go to church on Easter. But it's not like God counts that. He's like, yeah, whatever. Easter's like, my family don't even get together on Easter. Like, we do Thanksgiving, you know.
So is Thanksgiving your holiday? Is that the one? Or is there a holiday that's the Marshall Brandon holiday?
My birthday. That would be, that's not a holiday, but I mean.
But it will be one day.
That's like the day that, like, that's like. Yo, it's my birthday. Because whenever it's your birthday, you'll be like, yo, it's my birthday. And get over it. You know what I'm saying? But my holidays, you know what's crazy? Doing comedy, it's like every day is like Saturday. So you don't really respect, like, you lose respect for the holidays because it's like, I'm off today.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's no holiday. There's nothing. And so, and a lot of times I end up working on a holiday weekend. You know what I mean? Or like on a holiday.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, we're going to have, you know, this Martin Luther King Day show. So you end up like I, you kind of lose, like, cause like holidays come, you get a 3-day weekend.
Yep.
Like I already got a 7-day weekend. so it's kind of like, it's hard for me to really like I kind of, you kind of lose respect for the holidays like that. You know, it's like the ones where you do see your family, those are cool and stuff like that. But I think probably, I look forward to Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's. I think New Year's will be my holiday.
There you go. Well, that's a stand-up comedy holiday, right? I work on New Year's. Yeah, that's it. Definitely. Always. All right. Last thing. If anyone's not already convinced to come see you April 14th to 16th at the Lounge, this is it. Elevator pitch. You used to work in sales. You said you sold insurance. Go for it.
Oh, yeah. I sold insurance. I sold leather coats. And now I'm slanging jokes. Ladies and gentlemen, look, I'm telling you, man, I am... I got a different breed of comedy. You know, it's everything that comedy's supposed to be. I think I check all of the boxes, even the storytelling box. So, you know, I've been working on telling better stories, but I just like, I'm funny from top to bottom. If you don't believe me, you can go Google anything on YouTube and watch it. And it'll be funny top to bottom. It's nonstop jokes. You know, and some thought provoke and in a thought provoking way. I mean, it's gonna be. I mean, it's great comedy, ladies. And not to, you know, toot my own horn, but this is the toot your own horn section. So, you guys are gonna miss, you know, being a part of something great if you're not there. I can promise you that, because it's only going up. It's only going up.
Go.
So.
There you go.
Get your tickets, dcimprov.com. Come on out April 14th through the 16th. I'll be in the Lounge.
You got it. That's where I'm sitting right now. So I'm looking forward to it. I will vouch for everything Marshall just said. Big fan. So really looking forward to seeing you in April. Thanks for hanging with us today.
Hey, man, thank you so much for having me on. It was my pleasure. We got to do this again, even when I'm not performing. Yeah, we do it. I'll come drop it on your show and just talk some shit.
We'll find a record store when you're here. We'll go hang out. Sound good?
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Done and done. Ladies and gentlemen, there you have it. Marshall Brandon. Marshall comes to the DC Improv Lounge Showroom April 14th through the 16th. That is a Thursday through a Saturday. He'll be headlining 5 total shows across that span. Tickets are available at dcimprov.com. And if you want to find Marshall online, well, on Twitter, he's Marshall Brandon Story. His name is spelled Marshall with 2 L's. Marshall Brandon Story, or on Twitter at Marshall B Comedy. Seriously, go check him out. I know that I say I like all the comedians on this podcast, and I do, but I really like Marshall. I think you'll have a great time if you go to his show. April 14th to 16th at the DC Improv. And now, hardcore listeners may recall that I promised you some sketch comedy at the start of this episode. Well, here it comes. On April 9th, Bad Medicine presents Sketch Night in our Lounge showroom. Bad Medicine is the DC Improv's resident sketch troupe. They teach our comedy school sketch classes. They also perform in our main showroom. And every few months, they bust out their Rolodex and bring in a couple sketch teams that they love to showcase them to DC audiences. On April 9th, Saturday night, in our lounge, they're bringing in High Drama, a group from Philadelphia, and Brick Penguin, a group from right here in DC. Last week, we gave you some sketches from both Brick Penguin and High Drama. This week, we will close out with a commercial by Bad Medicine themselves. And then finally, The Last Days of Rose and Jack from Titanic, as presented by High Drama. Check these out, enjoy them, and of course, get your tickets to see Sketch Night at the DC Improv Lounge, April 9th, available at dcimprov.com. I'll say goodbye here and then leave you with the sketches. Thank you, as always, for listening. We would love to see you at the club this April, but however you are spending the month, we sincerely hope you're spending part of it laughing. And we'll see you next time on the other side. I'm Chris White.
Are you feeling lonely, even though you're always surrounded by U.S. Marshals? Is it hard to find that special someone and provide testimony in an organized crime trial? Are you living out a new life for the rest of your life under government protection? Then you should subscribe to Witnesses Only, the only dating app for people in the Witness Protection Program. Download our app to receive a short list of local secret singles. You can browse their redacted profiles and swipe right if you like what you see. Join today to meet singles like John Doe,
I used to launder money as a tax accountant for a Chicago law firm, but I'm ready to begin anew in Arizona, especially now that my family thinks I'm dead.
While people are trying to find you, you could be finding your special someone, all thanks to Witnesses Only. So sign up to bond with people like Jane Smith, and together discover new passions, such as raising show ponies in Colorado.
I don't miss kidnapping young women while working as a flight attendant for a cartel. Now, the only drug I smuggle is love.
We cater to all types of witnesses of any crime. Murder, racketeering, even loitering. No matter the reason for your protection, Witnesses Only will help you find the right connection.
So, yeah, I've strangled a kid before, but I'm still a fun guy. Let's chat.
Witnesses Only, the only dating app for people in the Witness Protection Program. Brought to you by Bumble.
And now, we present to you an unreleased alternate ending from the 1997 film Titanic.
I wish I could be up there with you, Rose, but there's just no room.
I'm sorry, Jack. I'm so sorry.
Don't be sorry. Just promise me one thing, okay? Promise me you'll never let go.
I'll never let go, Jack.
That's right, Rose. Never let go. That's right.
Oh, Jack. My poor Jack. What? Jack?
Ooh, you know what? I think we owe it to ourselves to give this whole floating on the door together thing another shot.
What now?
Yeah, I'm pretty certain I can get on that thing with you. Now, just give me a second here. I just gotta... Come on, I just need to... Come on!
Jack, we already tried this. It didn't work out last time.
Come on. No. I really think I got it here. I just gotta...
No, I don't think... Okay, all right. Yep. You know what they say. When at first you don't succeed, stop.
But Rose! But
it's an old first class thing. I'm gonna miss you. I really am. But this door I'm on, it's just way too... It's teeny, you know?
Hello? Looks like you got quite a bit of room on that door there.
Nope, sorry. All filled up.
Oh, I'm not talking about me. I'm a bit too large. But your friends fit like a fiddle.
Oh, yeah, we tried. It didn't work.
Nonsense. Hey, let me head over there.
Okay. You don't need to...
Oh, yeah. He's quite the slender one. Here, just shift your weight and lean back a bit, and then you would...
Let me help you there.
Oh, my God! What are you doing?
Oh, nothing. I was, helping him find his wife. Oh, there she is. There she is.
Oh, Rose! Rose, what's going on here? Do you not even want to try to let me up? Oh, no. You're not... It's not someone else, is it? Oh... It's not Billy Zane, is it?
Oh, no. He's just way too... You know, Billy Zane.
Oof. Well, I'm happy to hear that, Rose, but this is just silly now. I'm getting up there. Listen. If you just move your right leg to the back, and I'll place my upper body here.
No, you are making it move.
It didn't move.
I saw it move. My foot touched the water.
Come on, no, listen. Plank. Yeah. Ooh, yeah, that's right. Plank, Rose, plank. It will work if you plank.
No.
Fine.
Way too embarrassing.
Ooh, I know. Head to toe.
What?
Yeah, head to toe. We'll both lie very straight, and if we don't move...
I'm not lying head to toe with you on the door.
Come on. Have you smelled your feet? I'm the one suffering here. Now, hold on. If I just... Come on.
No. Now you're really not getting... No. Gotta, no, wait.
You're not helping
I know.
Here. Hold on. Come on. I just...
Oh, no, Jack. It looks like you fell into that cold, cold water again.
Okay, it's fine. I have some footing here, so I can easily get back on.
No, Jack, listen. I love you, but I've accepted that I've already lost you.
But Rose, I'm right here, Rose.
Here. Let me hold you, Jack.
Thanks, Rose. Thanks. I really do love you, and I just want...
Ow! Ow! Your nails are really digging into my hands.
I told you I'd never let go, Jack.
I know, but... Ow! Ow! You're really hurting me.
I'm holding on to you, Jack.
Ow! Come on, are you trying to hit a pressure point here?
I'm never letting go. I'm never
let
letting go.
Let go! Ow! Let go, damn it! Oh, God, your hands are so strong.
Like one of your French girls?
Stop it with the French girls. This is getting ridiculous now. I can clearly fit on... Rose, I just...
Jack? Jack? Oh, Jack. My poor Jack. Goodbye. I will always have this heart of the ocean to remember you by. And this door. This comfy, roomy door. Hey-o. Hey, Josephine, in your flying machine. There she goes, there she goes. Hey, Josephine.